Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is All Things Elite. Welcome back to All Things Elite. Load up the pod, man, it's on when we speak. Rich right here, let me warm it up for Austin and Floyd. Couldn't be no one but the boys. When it come to All Things Elite from the fan perspective, swear, man, it ain't no question. Hear from them first. Swear, man, they putting in the work. No, they had to get me for the verse. Social Suplex Network Zone. I was at a time in your headphones. Austin and Floyd on the microphone. Backing out on the rant, getting in the zone. Pulling up the show, give it 7 stars, you already know. Who else could it be but the show with the proclivity for a positivity? I'm gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 305th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwitz. I am the host of this lovely show, and joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and friend, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how are you doing?
Dude, I am wonderful. It is a happy new year. In 48 hours, I will still be on a plane to Tokyo, Japan, Haneda Airport.
To
cross off what is pretty much the last thing on my wrestling bucket list. Wrestle Kingdom in Tokyo. I'll be going with my friend Daniel, and I'll be meeting up with JR and his wife and family and the guys from Keeping It Strong Style. So I'm very excited. So this is, I mean, it's the last day of the year, so no matter what, this is the last one of the year. But this is the last show you'll hear until, let's see, what's the, yeah, the first Wednesday, well, that first week after the 9th. So we are taking our yearly year break because, you know, I'm going to Japan, and I'm going to, you know, actually be there. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'll just be like, I know not everyone knows me, but I'll, you know, be like, so busy doing other things that, you know, I might not enjoy the whole trip, but I plan on being very present while I'm in Japan. So I guess this is the last show until the 15th of January. So we'll be doing a big time catch up on that in case something, unless something big AEW hits up, and then I'll be like, right, Austin, I got my laptop, I got my headset, let's go. Cause I'll be what, your East Coast time. So
yes.
I'll be 14 hours ahead of you. So, So it's just, it'd be too confusing trying to, you know, put that all together. Shout out to my boy Sam in Australia. He always seems to make it work out. But, I'm excited about that. How was your Christmas? You get a lot of good stuff?
Yeah, no, it was a chill Christmas, honestly. I immediately got to go and go to a bowl game on Friday with the Detroit bowl game that took place with us, my old school, Central Michigan. We were going to record this podcast literally actually last night, and then Teams was being weird, and then I threw up a couple hours later, and I was like, you know what, might have been a good idea, the fact that we didn't record this night. So we're recording this right now, just a couple hours before Dynamite New Year Smash takes place. So we are really excited to be able to finally get up our thoughts and opinions and our little review of AEW World's End. I mean, our boy, of course, was in attendance, and he's, like I said, coming back from Chicago, and then at the same time, like you just said, getting ready to go to Japan. So this man is getting ready to put in work in the stands right now for these AEW shows.
Japan is going to be interesting. I decided my thing is going to be observe and kind of mimic Yeah. You know, because, you know, I've been told, you know, I've watched Japanese wrestling a lot. So the crowds are a little bit more quiet, especially more than I'm used to. There's not a lot of hooping and hollering. It just seems like a quieter society. So for someone like me, who is very boisterous, very loud, you know, that can come, you know, I'm going to have to adjust. I'm going in their land. So I plan on, you know, observing, taking everything in and adjusting to the best of my ability. I imagine some people might see me and think, hey, man, that guy doesn't talk too much because I am really going to try to be on my best behavior and not a big, loud American. So there you go.
There you go. It's going to be a bit of a culture shock, I'm sure, but I'm super excited for you, though, because it should be an amazing trip.
Yeah, and this is, yeah, like, I've been to the UK, and I always say that the UK is like, if you go to an alternate reality where everything is just slightly different. They speak the same language, the blah, 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 but everything is just slightly different. I could adjust to that, you know, but, and, you know, because of the football culture there and everything, big old loud UK people. That's a real thing. They're, you know, so it was like, oh, I can match this energy. There, yeah, it's going to be, Floyd's going to have to learn how to be a little different. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm actually looking forward to it because, you know, you get comfortable in this life and you should experience different things if you can. I tell a friend of mine who is very, like, she very much has her life and the way she does things, and I understand, but she's really, really, she's young, you know, she's even younger than you, and I'm just like, experience things, even if you fucking hate it and will never do it again, you should try it once, you know. So Japan, the flight is the biggest experience for me.
Oh, no doubt. No,
I've never been on a plane as long as I'm about to be on this plane. So I'm looking forward to everything, but we have a limited amount of time before Dynamite starts, so I can talk about what's anticipating all the time. So we need to get to work, sir. So there you go.
Yes, we do. We'll get to work right now with our World's End review. Before we get into it, though, just real quickly, guys, we appreciate your support. We want to make sure you guys continue to download this fine show, whether you listen to us on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're getting this podcast. Give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish, and then rate, review, subscribe, and turn automatic downloads on. Leave a review if you would wish as well. And then if you're so inclined, you can also follow this podcast on Twitter. We are at AT Elite Pod on Twitter. At Social Suplex are the guys that make this show possible. Check out all the other shows they have on their network. I'm at Austin Sumowicz, SZUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. And remember to always check out the Social Suplex newsletter. You can find the link for it in the description of the show. And news of the week is, I mean, it is New Year's. Happy New Year's to everybody. By the time you guys hear this, I mean, it's only a few hours on my side of the coast for New Year's and for 2026. I would love to know, Floyd, before we get into pay-per-view review, just like if you had to choose like a top moment that you got to experience in 2025, AEW related, like, could you tell me what would probably be that top moment?
Okay. So I gotta hedge and go. I gotta go with two. So,
okay.
All in Texas, just that whole experience. For me, just like, you know, the whole first row experience at All In. I'd never been first row at a stadium show. I take that All In. Of course, if you look at my face, after Hangman wins in the main event, you might not tell that I was happy, but I enjoyed everything else. And then number two would be Toronto with Jackie watching FTR versus Christian and Cope. It's funny because, you know, I catch shit, you know, because I do. I mean, I root for FTR. You're like, I say this about this, like, wrestling is a little different than other sports. AEW is my team that I root for, right?
Right, yes.
FTR is my favorite players. Whether they are heel, face, whatever they are, whatever words you want to use for bad guys, good guys, they're my favorite players. I'm rooting for them no matter what. You know, I'm rooting for him no matter what. I feel that way about certain people in the company. Of course, Takeshita, and, you know, like MJF. You know, I'm pretty consistent on the people that I like.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not. I mean, I'm the guy that roots for the heels. I'm not that guy. I just root for them no matter what. So I don't really care what side on it. Because, again, I always say this, and it's a term I use. We know what we're watching. It's like when I was young, you know, of course I went for Hulk Hogan. Of course I went for Sting. I loved Arn Anderson, don't get me wrong, because he was on the TV I could see. But I generally went for the good guys because, again, didn't know what I was watching. But I know what I'm watching. I'm watching entertainment now. So generally I can find stuff entertaining whether you're the good guy, bad guy, whatever situation you are in this case. So
right.
Yeah. So I really do just love my team, just love my boys. And, those two moments were big, seeing Hank, specifically from All In, the Young Bucks versus Swerve and Hangman, which, I've been going through the nominees. It might be my match of the year. And I even tell people, when you go through match of the year, yeah, I mean, if you want to do quality, that's great. But if you listen to this show, we're all about what you enjoy the most.
Right.
And that match was so fucking over the top, so fucking crazy. And it was just like four of the best wrestlers in the world. I know I give Hangman shit, but Hangman's one of the better wrestlers in the world, don't get me wrong. So I understand that. So you got Hangman, you got Swerve, you got the Young Bucks. They had the big time entrances, the Founding Father entrances, that whole experience of that, however many minutes it happened between the entrances and the match, man, that shit. I loved everything about All In, that Dustin winning, all that kind of stuff. So no, I had a good time. And like, even like All In is going to absolutely, if any voting everywhere, it's going to be my match of the year. And people are like, well, this one was better. And I'm like, well, you didn't have the experience that I had.
Right.
You know, and I didn't have the experience that you had. So, you know, what I think is great will probably be slightly different than you because we had two different experiences watching it.
Yeah. And for me, it's going to be like a toss-up of like a couple things for me, which is one, obviously, like you said, All In Texas. That match between Swerve and Ospreay versus the Bucks was unreal. I also would say being able to do... I had two moments with AEW wrestlers with karaoke, which was funny, with the Jericho Cruz. That's honestly like... That was so early in the year, but it was still one of my favorite moments of this year was being a part of that cruise. Like that was such a cool experience. Like, and I was so grateful I finally got to make that happen. And then also, I mean, like we got to finally, me and Sydney finally got our picture with TK. Like it took forever. It felt like before we were able to finally make that happen. But when they came to Detroit to the Masonic Temple, we finally were able to make that happen. So, I mean, there was a lot of really cool moments for AEW and myself. Like it was just cool to be able to see everything. And again, this year was just such a real like return to form. It feels like for AEW overall, it feels like just everything was just spectacular this year. We got such a great bounce back year. It felt like,
dude, I almost forgot. I've done a lot this year. I forgot. Finally got to do Detroit.
Yeah, you were here with us.
Yeah. I finally got to do Detroit. It was really crazy. It was a great way to finally get it done. As Sydney was getting ready to go to vet school, and so it was like it was set up correctly, and I plan on Detroit being a regular stop on my wrestling experience.
Doubt.
So 2024, I did 15 wrestling shows. In 2025, I backslid. I only did 12. So I have something to prove in 2026. Okay.
The turn up is going to be crazy.
Yeah, I got something to prove. I'm not supposed to go backwards on these things. So 2026 is going to be dumb. I mean, if you see me randomly in your city, you're going to be like, what the hell? I'm like, nah, I got something to prove. Got a chip on my shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's get right into it, guys. It's time to talk about AEW World's End. Real quickly, do you want to kind of touch on anything specifically from Zero Hour that was like really stuck out to you?
Dude, I barely remember Zero Hour.
I was just going to say, that's kind of where I was like, wanted to kind of like, you know, just touch on some top spots. I was like, Mascara Dorada and Bandido were unreal against Mark Davis and Rocky Romero. If I had to pick a match of Zero Hour, it would be that.
Grizzly Young Veterans, Zach Gibson on there. Now, there was a time, especially with the WWE UK tournament, Zach Gibson was in the finals against Pete Dunne, and was it Tyler Bate? I think Tyler Bate might have been the first WWE.
It might have been
a UK champion. Well, that being said, I've always liked Zach Gibson, Liverpool's number one. I've always thought he was a great, great bad guy. Always thought Grizzly Young Veterans were a good team. I remember when they debuted at All In London. I always said, I watched it and I was just like, I remember they attacked FTR and I was like, I want to see this match for my personal enjoyment. But I was like, I don't know how much fans are going to take to it. Because, in essence, you know, like, GYV's kind of lowercase FTR. They very much are very much a technical or really good heel tag team. So I didn't know how that was going to work. So I'm glad to see them using Zach Gibson and James Great. I'm glad to see Ortiz back. That was awesome. He's been out for almost 2 years, roughly. And I didn't know how that was going to work out with him not having Santana anymore. So I'm glad they got him in his group. And then, when the Demand attacked Luchasaurus, I just laughed. Because it's always, faces are stupid. They literally said on the interview that's what they were going to do.
Yep.
Like, hey, Luchasaurus, why aren't you watching your back? But again, it wouldn't have been a show if that doesn't happen, but it was still just funny that way. But yeah, that's my thoughts from Zero Hour. Also, I watched the show from a suite, which is...
Yes, you did. You went the suite gang again.
Yeah, I was only second time. Hey, shout out to Mike and shout out to Chris who introduced me to Mike. Got me free tickets to the show. I want to be first row. Hey, shit. I like to be down there with the people. But free is free, motherfucker. So I rocked the shit out of this free ticket up in the suites. It was a great time because, you know, like when you're on the floor, there's this thing, the bathroom break match, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a decision, especially as you get older.
Oh, you do, yeah.
Your bladder doesn't work that way. You don't have to make this decision in the suites. It takes you like, especially being a dude, it takes you like 2 minutes. You literally get up out the chair. The bathroom's never full. You go pee. You get back. I literally left doing an entrance and came back, and it was like, oh, let's go. I don't even remember. I think it might have been the entrance to like the women's tag, like the beginning entrance.
Yeah.
I just went and I peed and watched the whole match. So I actually, up in the suites, I actually see more of the show.
Yeah. I will say real quick, though, I will say this. In the match between Josh Alexander and the Demand versus Jet Speed and Jurassic Express, there is a moment that went a little bit viral on social media, which was the fact of like Jungle Boy Jack Perry was on knocked to the outside and was over by the railing by fans, and a person asked if he wanted a drink, and they had like a soda or a pop, and then proceeded to. Jack just laid on the ground, face up, mouth open, as the woman poured like a Coca-Cola or something into his mouth, and he's like, "Thank you," and then goes. And I think Kevin Knight did the exact same thing. I'm gonna tell you this right now. Objectively, that was funny, but if he did that on the main card, I would have told him to act like he had fucking been there before and knock it the hell off, because that's some shit that you would normally see at like house shows or whatever, not at like a pay-per-view. So it kind of was like. I would probably be more mad that he did that if he was wrestling on the main card. Zero Hour, I give it a pass. It was funny.
Yeah. Act like you've been there before. You know? I'm just like, hey, man, I've been told you should stay hydrated. Jack Perry just took that seriously. So there you go. Stay hydrated.
Sure. I'm just saying, part of me, I was just like, imagine if he was in like a blood feud match or something, like he was like both these guys were like so determined to beat the hell out of each other in this feud, and it was a pay-per-view match, and then he just takes time to just roll to the outside and then take a drink from a fan.
No.
It would take a little bit away from it, wouldn't it?
It would take away from it, absolutely. I just said, like those type of moments is, like, when you're watching a live performance, especially.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, it was cool because it gave that person something.
Again, yeah, like I said, I'm not gonna be all like, oh man, like you absolutely fucked that up, like you shouldn't have done that. No, like I said, it was objectively very funny.
Yeah, I should have shared a video from a couple of years ago in Oklahoma where it was like Roderick Strong was like, Floyd, you're stupid, and it's literally one of my more liked videos on my socials because it was just like, oh shit, I was on AEW TV. Like, my name, and, like, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was the only thing. And, again, like I said, it didn't really bother me that much. I just thought, like, that was just something that popped in my head. But we'll move quickly now over to the opening of the show, which we opened, of course, with the two semifinal matches of the Continental Classic. We go into the first one, Kazuchika Okada versus Konosuke Takeshita. What a fucking first match, first of all, to, like, start with. Like, that the fact that this was opening the show, like, was an immediate, like, oh, shit, here we go. And it took a little bit to get going. When it did, though, I felt like it really started to get going. The finish was a bit of a mess, unfortunately. But outside of that, I thought this was good. But I definitely feel like these two guys obviously left a lot out there where you want to see a rematch. And I think that's the thing, is we're going to get building to an inevitable rematch. This seemed like the prelude to that. You know what I mean? It was really good, but man, I wanted it so much more. I wanted so much more out of this match, but it was still really, really good.
So as people that listen to the show might know, this was the match I traveled for. This is the match I bought the ticket for and everything.
Yes.
There was, with Japan happening, there was no reason I should have made this trip. But Okada Takeshita was the reason I made it. And people were like, what'd you think of the match? And I was like, how it was done, being the first match of the C2, right? And with the result they went with, to me, and I know I'm going to be the only one that thinks like that, I thought it was the perfect match.
Okay.
I think you gave us a teaser. An appetizer.
I agree with that. Yes.
It's like, oh, it's like you go to a restaurant and somebody's like, okay, here's this appetizer of this steak. You've never had this steak before. I just want to see what you think. And you take a bite and you're like, oh shit, that's amazing. The next time I come, I want so much more out of this steak. This is what I'm getting. Yep. And Okada and Takeshita, that was what it was. It was like, here's a little appetizer. You even saw how they were moving, how they were reversing each other. Yeah. It was beautiful. It was beautiful in that 20 minutes. And I personally believe, I'm just going to say storyline-wise, Okada right now, Takeshita is what Okada kind of used to be. Takeshita is in his prime and his rise. He's the IWGP World Champion. Okada is a little older. I mean, he's still in his prime, but maybe at the end of his prime. So I felt like the story was Takeshita is better than Okada. Takeshita kind of dominated the match. Okada's still Okada. He's still strategic. And that's what, in the end, he used the strategy. He's like, he got desperate. He's like, oh, this dude's about to finish me. I don't know how much more of this to take. And then he grabs the screwdriver and ends it. He grabs Kyle's screwdriver, which will be important, and ends the match with it. And I think that was the perfect ending because it wasn't really a definitive finish. And again, with what was going to happen later, it made sense. At the time, when I'm talking about the show, I'm watching the show and I watch it, and I was like, oh, that was fine. It was good. I saw what's going to be a great match one day. You know? And then I was like, but there was a taste in my mouth. But then when I saw the way the rest of the played out, it actually made more sense to me. Also, I don't know, like, wrestling, fortunately, you do know about the politics of wrestling. I don't know if New Japan wants their champion that's about to semi-main their biggest Wrestle Kingdom in over 20 years losing clean to Okada what, a week before their big show? So, yes. I mean, I think that might have played into it. It might not have played anything into it. It might have been exactly what they planned from the beginning. But, unfortunately, in the wrestling town with us knowing a little bit more or being, I'll say being aware, because I always say yes. I don't know shit. But we are aware that this stuff kind of exists in the whole political stature. Maybe they had something to do with it. But there was some, that Blue Thunderbomb he caught him with yes. as the reversal was so fucking beautiful. And when he hit him with the Rainmaker and then Takeshi just no-sold it, oh my God. I thought that was the story of the match. people kick out of the Rainmaker. People kick out of the Rainmaker. And again, you might have to talk to Keeping the Strong Style to get it. But I, from the time I've seen Okada, I've never seen somebody just fucking no-sell the Rainmaker.
It's not a thing that you see too often, if at all.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He just, like, the fuck are you doing? And you would think it'd be somebody like Brody King that does that. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, Brody
exactly.
King looks like you're like, what the fuck were you trying to do? But no, it was Takeshita, and he gave him that. Like, hey, little dude, what was that? and it's the Rainmaker. It's the move that has ended, you know, more big matches in New Japan than probably any other move other than, like, the high fly right. flow. And he just, like, looked at him, and you saw the fear in Okada's eye, like, what the fuck? And then he hit him with it again and finally knocked him down. But it was just like, in his mind, he was so far away from actually putting Takeshita away, he didn't have enough. So there's a story there, and I like it. But like I said, I mean, when someone says, oh, that was like a 3.5-star match, I think it was booked to be a 3.5-star match. As much as...
No, yeah, like I said, it was clearly meant to be the prelude, I think is an easy way to put it.
Yeah, and when they do it, it's going to be bigger, and it's going to be some stuff on the line. And maybe some stuff comes from it tonight. Maybe stuff comes from Wrestle Kingdom. We'll see. But, yeah, I definitely liked it. I felt like it was worth the trip. I'm definitely not selling it to be like, oh, yeah, no, I thought it was worth the trip. I really enjoyed the match. I was far, like, I was in the suites. So I really couldn't tell what happened in that final stretch. They got the pin. So I literally came back to the hotel and, you know, me and Chris were sitting there. And the first thing I did was just hook up the cable and press play. Because I literally needed, I was like, what the fuck happened? So we're there.
Yeah, yeah. And again, like I said, the ending was a little bit awkward, but it didn't take away from it at the end of the day. Like I said, I enjoyed the match a lot, but I'm my head is too much just like in the future now when this rematch happens, and I'm just like, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? It's like I'm too locked in on what that next match is going to be that I'm like too much like that's all that's in my head. I acknowledge that this was really good. But I'm in my head. I'm like, what's next is going to be unreal, though.
So shout out, Tony Khan. We gotta have a talk about this. Okada, Takeshita, these big matches. I know this was the C2 thing. Not a lot you can do about it. I get it, but we need some time on this because I was just thinking, if I was waiting for them to announce it. Of course, they announced it Wednesday. I doubt I would have been able to make it without, like, driving, get the time off, all that kind of stuff. Can you give me a few weeks when you do a Tata Takeshita the next time? Definitely don't put it, like, on a Dynamite where you announce it on Monday. Don't put it on a Collision where you're announcing on something like that. Build to it, whatever show you do it to, give us a couple weeks so we can make plans. Because, well, I love AEW. And, like, I already have tickets to Revolution, no card announced. Most people do wait for at least a match or two to get announced to decide they're going to the show. And if you're trying to maximize ticket sales, yeah, certain of these events need to be announced ahead of time. And Okada Takeshita is one of them. Because I remember the Young Bucks. You remember we were doing the show, Young Bucks and FTR, too. And... the motherfuckers literally announced it like Tuesday, and they said, "Oh, it's in Philly on Wednesday." Fuck you!
Come on!
What do you do about that? You're like, I can't go to every Dynamite So, like, for someone like me, I'm not saying me, I'm not the center of the AEW universe or have no recognition, but someone like me, let's just say you live in California, let's say you live in Texas, right, and you love FTR and you love the Young Bucks, and you want to, you know, watch the match live,
right,
you know, time off, blah, 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 you know, you need those big matches. I'm talking about the big matches. Like,
oh, yeah,
they just announced the Bandido and Beast Mortals for Dynamite tonight, and it's like, oh, that's a banger, but that's not one I need 2 weeks on. But, you know, give us the big ones. Give us some time to make it to the show.
Yeah, no, exactly. But we'll move over now into the second half of the Continental Classic semifinals. Jon Moxley versus Kyle Fletcher. And yeah, this match was also really freaking good. Unfortunately, it feels like it started a little bit of a Twitter firestorm as well. This and a couple other moments from the show has spawned a lot of conversation, specifically among wrestlers, I feel like. Among the wrestlers is where it matters the most, obviously. But some fans felt the need to weigh their thoughts in it, which is the mindset of Kyle Fletcher got dropped on his fucking head, like, and it was bad. Like, it looked bad. The move was insane. It, like, looked very, very like Jesus Christ. But all of a sudden, then William Regal chimed in on social media about wrestlers falling on their heads and basically being like, you're going to regret doing that. There's no reason to do that. Kenny Omega replied to it. MJF, I think, replied to it, I think, or something. But it spawned a little bit of a conversation. And, you know, with Kenny and William Regal, it was very much, like I said, it wasn't a situation of tribalism. It was just, you know, wrestlers having conversations, and it was respectful and all that kind of stuff. I feel like in fans, not the case at all.
I will say this. I will take wrestling out of it.
Yes.
Everybody knows, I work in IT, I work on computers, right? When it comes down to it, if I'm beginning my IT career, you're beginning your IT career, and I have had a fairly good to successful IT career over the last 15 to 20 years, and you ask me about getting in, or you ask me about getting an IT, or I see you're doing something wrong, and I say, hey, you know what? With all my years of experience, this is what I suggest will help you have a better life. Whether you listen to it or not, whether you heed it and actually, you know, make changes based on that conversation, that's up to you. But when someone has had a career, you know what I mean, had this time, is working in the wrestling business for as long as you are, I'm going to at least listen. I'm going to maybe watch my match and say, hey, maybe there's a couple things I can do a little different that hopefully will give me a better quality of life. I am not one of those wrestler fans that be like overly concerned because I say this a lot and I don't want to diminish it. I have been watching wrestling so long, I'm kind of numb to it. It's kind of like you have to do something pretty overt for me to be like, oh, I hope you're okay, because like wrestling.
And the other thing too is like, I'm never going to comment on like what wrestlers should or shouldn't do. Cause again, I have no willingness or regard, like, I got nothing that I can add to that. Like, I have no credibility regarding that kind of conversation. Like, the wrestlers can talk to the wrestlers. If you're a wrestling fan trying to tell wrestlers what they should and shouldn't do, it's the same thing I say with Darby. It's like, I can't tell the dude what to do. You know what I mean? It's his body. It's his career. He does what the hell he wants to do. And if people enjoy it, then that's what works for him. But, like, I'm not going to be the guy being like, you shouldn't wrestle like that. It's like, it's a conversation that I'm not privy to.
Yeah, and that's another big thing. But I'm just saying, like I say, in my thing, it's like, if you're a young wrestler in it, you see him struggling. You see people like Bryan Danielson struggling. You see all these neck injuries out there. And he's saying, hey, you know, either, you know, in essence, he's saying either watch your neck or know what to expect kind of thing. You know, hey, don't listen to me, but at least know what's coming. You know, a very rough life could be in the head depending on your body type. And Kenny Omega had a very diplomatic answer. I'm telling you, if I had a war and I needed it to end, I'm sending Kenny Omega. That was such a diplomatic, presidential, amazing answer to his thought.
1,000%. Yeah,
it was so diplomatic. That's the guy I'm sending in the room to broker peace, okay? But, it went away. It went a certain way, like things do in wrestling. To me, again, it's not a conversation I'm a part of. If you go look at my Twitter, you go look at Discord, you go look at whatever, I didn't make one comment on it. I ain't never took a bump. I am not a wrestler. I can tell you what matches I want to see. I can tell you what I'm willing to pay for. I can tell you what makes me uneasy or whatever. The one thing I cannot do is tell you how to protect your body. You have been trained. There have been times where I thought people got killed. They was like, dude, I barely felt it. It was like performed correctly. That's the whole thing about the magic trick that is wrestling. You don't know. And like, if you super slow-mo a lot of things, you know, it may look like worse than it is, but that's what they do. So I am going to sit over here and shut my mouth.
Yeah.
And just say, like I said, speaking outside of wrestling, if a veteran tells me something, I'm just not going to dismiss it. I'm going to at least listen.
Right.
Then you maybe dismiss it after that, but give the respect of at least listening and seeing what you can do, because I imagine there's going to be a time when you're done doing this and you may want to play with your kids or you may want to, you know, do CrossFit or just do something to stay active. And, you know, your neck and your back, all that stuff is very important to how you fully function. Your neck gives you problems all through your body. So I want everyone to be healthy. I want everybody to walk away. But one thing I do, just like watching football, just like watching any other MMA or anything else, it's dangerous. Your body's not going to be the same when you're done doing it, because it's an unnatural act to do in your body. We spend our whole lives, people like me and you, trying to avoid falling, right? They fall on purpose for a living.
So, yeah. That's I just wanted to mention that real quick. The other thing, too, is that the match itself, we were seeing the crowd really move towards cheering Moxley again. And you saw kind of like the flip right there. Like, this was the moment specifically where the crowd, I think the crowd knew where the inevitable story of Moxley and the Death Riders is going. And they were like, we're going to jump out ahead of this. And we're going to be like, we're going to add to it. And basically started really getting behind Moxley in this match.
Shout out to Dr. Lariat. He basically told me how the thing was going, the whole, what was going to happen, who was going to be the finals, who was going to win, all before it happened. And I was like, I never saw it that way. And I saw a little promo where Mox kind of mentioned the Don Callis family.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay, this might lead to something eventually down the road, but it felt like it came out of nowhere. And I saw his whole Continental Classic is this, and I'm just like, yeah, that's just Mox. That's the whole thing. But I did not feel a face turn. I mean, I've been watching, I watch every episode, every minute, every show. The Death Riders, I mean, Darby Allin had just gotten thrown down a flight of stairs by Gabe Kidd. You were literally had a heel versus face match with the Death Riders versus the Conglomeration. I mean, the Death Riders were not turning face. And and I will say this about AEW and in general. And again, this is one of those things. I understood what happened. It worked in Chicago, apparently. I didn't like it because of one thing. When I had to, you know, I've had a few days to think about it. In AEW, and I said this before, kind of before we got on, heel turns are overt. It is Kyle Fletcher stabbing fucking Will Ospreay in the head. It is Jon Moxley fucking suffocating Bryan Danielson, you know, and then in the same thing, you know, same thing, Willa Yuta hitting him with a psycho knee. It is like, the heel turns are so overt.
Correct.
What happened to the overt face turn? Where the injustice is happening, and then this guy that's kind of an asshole realizes the errors of his ways and either comes and saves someone or does something and has this massive face turn. His face turn was basically two promos where he was just talking about following the rules that were in place of the tournament. No one could have interference anyway. So it wasn't like, you know, he was doing something particularly heroic. Like I said, there was nothing heroic about it. It was just, I mean, he had been tapping out to people. And I was also very confused because over this last few months, this man put Hangman over twice, put fucking Kyle O'Reilly over, put Darby Allin over. All right. So now you come to Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher, I talked about last week, having one of the better 2025s as far as booking. You can clearly see an elevation.
Yes.
This is the match to establish Kyle Fletcher as a main event guy. He lost the Hangman already. This is the match to establish Kyle Fletcher as a main event guy in my mind.
I agree.
And they put on a fucking banger. Don't get me wrong. I don't think Kyle Fletcher is able to have a bad match. But then he loses.
He's really not.
Yeah. Then he loses. And I was like, Proto Kata, Proto Keshda. I feel like those two, because of those statements, those two being in the finals, whether it was, you know, Proto Keshda, and then it was going to be against Proto Kata, you know? And it was just like, that seemed like that's been the story for a few months, that, you know, they were going to end up having to fight each other. And then it was like, and then Mox won. Mox is the one that ends, Mox is the one that gets into the finals against Okada, and it's just like, so you got these two young guys, Takeshita and Fletcher, who seem to be on the rise. You have these two older guys that are established. Mox has proven losing does not hurt him. I mean, he's lost all these matches, yeah, and it does not affect him.
It seemed like, to have the C2 make somebody, you would think it would be Fletcher or Takeshita that would be made from it. But instead, Moxley gets the win. And again, I love Fletcher's spot where he went to go look for his screwdriver and it wasn't there.
Dude.
Like, that's such a good spot. A good moment.
I'm all about the matches connecting. That was perfect. How it was executed, I honestly can't have a problem with. Just because I don't necessarily like the story, I don't like what they did, that doesn't mean it wasn't executed well. Really did come off like an amazing baby face with the whole ankle thing and, you know, not tapping out, but it just felt like there was truly no character growth that led him to this. It was just like he woke up one day and decided, hey, shoot, I don't hate everything anymore. Yeah, I was confused. Well, not confused. Yeah. Not confused. I ain't like
just
it.
Just a little bit.
No, I ain't like it. I won't be confused. I'm a fairly intelligent man. I understood what was going on. I didn't like it. That's what it comes down to.
There you go.
Yeah.
Again, I was fine with the decision to have Mox win the thing, win this match. It caught me off guard, definitely. I thought it was surprising. I think it does make it interesting exactly how...
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Things shake out with him and the Death Riders and exactly what the decisions behind everything goes with, but even still, and I do like having Fletcher attack Moxley afterwards to sell the fact of like his leg is fucked and how's that gonna fare for him in the final. I do like that. I do like the connecting of the matches. But if it was me, I would have had this match again. Okada loses to Takeshita. Fletcher loses to Fletcher beats Moxley, and then you have another Don Callis versus Don Callis family matchup, and then this is where the real split takes place.
I've been talking about it over like the last few weeks. I feel like I'm the only one throwing this out there, and I might ultimately end up being wrong that a heel turn might not be coming for the Death Riders.
It may not.
It may not. It's just like, I don't know if they have a charismatic face that could take over. I mean, Claudio's respected, Pac is respected. I just don't know they would have a charismatic face of the group. And I mean, not like babyface. I mean, like the leader of the group. Second of all, it's just like I said, it just seems like this is more of a Suzuki Goon situation where they just don't like anyone. Mox will fight anyone. Death Riders will fight anyone. They'll fight the conglomeration. They'll fight the Don Callis family. They'll fight you and your family if you're in the way. They don't care. And I kind of like a tweener faction like that because the reason I like it, not because it's dear friend or it's because when you're out through the year and you need factions, you don't want to have to build a faction every time you need a war. They're already there. Sometimes they're leaning face. Sometimes they're leaving heel. The thing about Mox being the Continental Classic champion, he can't cheat anyway. So it's really no way to be overtly heel in the Continental Classic. Even with nut shots and all that kind of stuff. I mean, a lot of that stuff is thrown away largely from the crowd. So it's just like, yeah, there's no real way to be overtly heel in the Continental Classic. So the heel turn might not be coming. Or if it does come, believe me, I'm very much in a wait and see situation.
Sure, yeah, and at least I will say that sounds more interesting than what the Death Riders were this past year. At least that whole idea of them being a tweener faction.
Absolutely.
That I will say.
Absolutely.
Okay, we move forward now to the AEW Tag Team Championship Chicago Street Fight between FTR and the Bang Bang Gang, Juice Robinson and Austin Gunn. First of all, may I say, before we get into all this stuff, can we please pour out a drink for our homeboy Big Stoke? You poor bastard. You are now in the most gif-able moment of the entire show, it feels like. One of, if not the motherfucker flew over the table and then it fell on top of him. My man, holy shit. Like, there was a lot. Like, this match was fun. I just thought this was a fun, enjoyable, nutty, silly match. I didn't really take it too seriously for the most part. I just felt like it was fun and enjoyable. I liked FTR getting all their stuff in and being able to be these diabolical heels. And then I thought the way Juice and Austin fought back was very admirable, and it gave the crowd something to root for. Having Austin Gunn put the trash can across his back was amazing. And then when he tried to jump towards Cash and missed, and he's like, oh shit, I might fall, and then Cash just pushes him over onto the Spanish announcers. Also very fucking funny. But yeah, when Stoke flew over the table, oh my god, I was dying. It was so funny. Like, FTR retains. It's a fun little tag team gimmick match, and yeah, FTR is still your World Tag Team Champions, as everyone should respect and acknowledge. But yeah, I thought I don't really got too much to say. This was just fun. This was just a fun match to break up the two wrestling clinics that we had to open up the show.
And exactly, that was the purpose. We got these two amazing matches. You don't want to be the match that has to follow, right? No match in the card wanted to mean a match that had to follow those two. You needed a kind of a palate cleanser. A street fight was a palate cleanser. I've seen a lot of people saying this match was too long, too boring, whatever. Of course, I enjoyed it, so I'm not gonna tell you about your personal enjoyment. But I think the biggest thing is you never thought Juice or Austin were going to win. I mean, going into the match, you didn't think they were going to win. During the match, you didn't think they were going to win. There was no point that you thought they were going to win. So you probably, like, you're as a person that maybe not be too invested in FTR or the Bang Bang Gang, you're like 6 minutes in the match, why hasn't FTR won yet? So when it goes 15 minutes, this is what I think it did, you're like, oh my God, why is this still going on so long? And I think Austin Gunn took like three pile drivers. But if you, again, FTR is close to my heart. They're very much an old school tag team. They were trying to make Austin and Juice look as strong as possible. And they did. They did. But of course, in this world, we're a little jaded. Well, you know, that's all it should have took. You have decided what you think Austin Gunn is and blah, blah. You know, a lot of those things work into it. I enjoyed the match. Did I think it was FTR's best match of the year? No. Did I think it was in their top five of the year? No. Was in the top 10 of the year? No. It was kind of just a match, and it was entertaining, and it cleansed your palate. It did the job. Again, on wrestling, anywhere, New Japan, whatever, there is very rarely where you're going to have a show that is nothing but bangers, you know?
No, yeah.
And so sometimes somebody has to bite the bullet and kind of have the regular match. And you got your table spots, you got your chair spots, you got all that stuff that is required by wrestling fans in 2025 for a show. You got all that, and then the match was over. So I've actually said way too more words than I thought I was going to say. Let's move on to the next match.
Let's move on, yes. But yeah, we'll move on to the next match. The next match is the Women's Tag Team Championship match between the Babes of Wrath, Harley Cameron, Willow Nightingale, and the TBS champion, Mercedes Moné, and the Ring of Honor Forever Women's Champion, Athena. I thought this was good. I thought there was a little bit of moments where things were a little bit, like kind of off at moments, but nothing too serious. But this had some really, really good stuff. Second half of the match, I thought, really kicked things up into gear, where you had the miscommunications with Mercedes and Athena, with them colliding with one another. Willow just bouncing all over the goddamn place, it felt like. Good title defense for the Babes of Wrath. I love the selling of the fact that Willow pinned Mercedes. I thought that was a huge moment for the match. And Athena was pissed about it. And then the backstage segment afterwards where Mercedes is losing her goddamn mind, throwing shit, and drops a straight up F-bomb in her interview, post-match interview with Lexi Nair. And I'm like, excuse the fuck out of me, Mercedes is fucking pissed. But yeah, no, I thought this was a good match. I thought it's a good title defense for the Babes of Wrath. And I love too that, like, again, Babes of Wrath are over as hell. And it was a fun match. I don't know necessarily if anyone thought that Babes of Wrath were going to lose the tag team titles that fast, even if it was Mercedes and Athena. But again, we here at All Things Elite always say real tag teams should always win tag team championships, not just throwing together people teaming together. So it was the right outcome.
Yeah, right outcome. Fun match. Only thing is, I thought it was going to lead to maybe. Yeah, can you hear me? Can you hear me? I'm not muted.
I got you.
You can hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. So,
I can hear you.
I like the real tag team. You know me, I like real tag teams. In this situation, it's leading to a different match than I thought with Willow pinning Mercedes. I thought it was going to end up leading to Athena and Mercedes. So, that's the only thing that really threw me off about this match. Again, I know there's some people, some wrestling purists out there that Harley Cameron's is not their thing. She's like one of my favorite things in the world. I just love her. She was mostly in this match. She performed a lot, but I thought she did good. Thought this match was just a fun match. If you ask me about it, I'm just going to say it was fun and the good guys won. And it continues Mercedes' spiral and downfall. And that's honestly the bigger part of the story. And it leads to a match on Dynamite in Nebraska. So, yeah, I saw everything about this. It did everything it was supposed to do.
Yeah, so we move now in. Yeah.
All right.
What's going on?
I don't know. Let's go to the next match.
We'll just go to the next match, yeah. So I'll go ahead and 3, 2, 1. All right, well, we'll go ahead now into the next match. Darby Allin going one-on-one with Gabe Kidd. If there was ever a match that was a filler match on the show, I think it might have been this. Like, I thought it was fine. I thought it was a solid enough match. Darby and Gabe were beating the fuck out of each other. And it was just like two guys that were just trying to physically kill each other. But I don't know. Like, for whatever reason, I love Darby's matches. I love how he just throws himself all over the place and the physicality of his matches. The moment where Gabe Kidd literally throws Darby over the railing and he goes over it too, that was a wild spot. The moment where he gets thrown into the ring post and then bounces off the cameraman was an insane spot, mainly for the fact that the camera guy even stayed with the spot. I thought the camera guy getting hit, he was going to fall down, but he stayed with Darby for the entire shot. And as a guy who films sports and stuff like that, honestly, unreal stuff from the camera guy in that spot. But yeah, and the Avalanche Code Red was also really well done from Darby in this match. The coffin drop to the outside looked like it fucking sucked. That just the way that they bounce was just nuts. But good counter with the reversing a sleeper to get the pin to get the three count for Darby. Solid match. They made it very violent, even though the fact that there was no real stipulations about the match with both guys just gushing blood. But overall, match itself, I thought was pretty good. If there was one match that I might not go back to a ton from this show, it might be this one. But overall, I still thought it was solid. But you could see how this match was kind of thrown together with Darby having to miss the C2.
Getting thrown down steps, being set on fire, being dragged by a car. I felt this match had the exact energy that it needed for this, because this kind of was an elevated rivalry, even though they had never had a match. So I thought that was great. Unfortunately, I never thought Gabe Kidd was going to win. So there was a ceiling on what the match could be. And, you know, Darby won. There was a lot of good stuff. I think you went over all the amazing spots from it. But yeah, it was a really good match. I'm hoping it's getting Darby back on the right track to be in a title picture or something going forward.
Yeah. We'll move now into the next match, which was the Mixed Nuts Mayhem between the Death Riders and the Conglomeration, with Timeless Tony Storm joining the Conglomeration for this match. Yeah. Mixed Nuts Mayhem is about as proper of a name that you could have for this match. It was straight up nuts. I loved Orange Cassidy making fun of Daniel Garcia with his stupid dance. I thought that was incredibly funny. The way that Marina Shafir did the pockets duel with Orange Cassidy and just physically kicked him in the legs, like, super stiff, was awesome. The moment that everyone is enjoying is the dance number spot with Orange Cassidy and Timeless Tony Storm, where they're doing the whole, like, oh, we spin you outwards, and then we hit somebody. It was super dumb and super funny. The dip that Orange Cassidy did, where he then put his foot up and then kicked Wheeler Yuta in the face, was so good. And I loved how, like, this being having the mixed match style allowed for some really fun spots. Like, again, Orange Cassidy and Tony, like I just mentioned, having the incredible moment. I'm so glad they mentioned it with Marina Shafir and Roderick Strong. Oh, just so good. And I love that the crowd picked up on it, too. I love that they got exactly what that moment was. And it was so good with Roddy getting kicked in the face. And then the swing from Claudio swinging around Tony Storm, such a good moment too. And then, yeah, I mean, just it was an enjoyable match. Like, the babyfaces get the win, big win with Briscoe getting the pinfall as he pins Wheeler Yuta with the J Driller. It's just enjoyable. Like, this is the type of match that I would love showing people that don't watch wrestling, because you're either gonna think it's dumb, or you're going to think it's just unbelievably entertaining. And I fall on the entertaining side.
Yep, this was a very fun match. This is one of those times you kind of hit on all the things I was going to hit on. I kind of want a Marina versus Roddy Dynamite match or Collision match.
They can book it. Just do it. You know what I'm saying?
Just do it. Let the husband on wife violence. I love it. No, I thought this match was super fun. And the one thing I came away is I want more Tony and OC on my screen.
They are amazing together.
Incredible chemistry. You know, when after the match, when he jumps into her arms and then Mina was acting jealous, that was, oh my God. That, like, Lou, dude, if you listen to the show sometimes, you may, you know, you have to pick up, I love fun just as much as the next person. Like, yes. I like wrestling and I like violence. I love FTR dropping people on heads. I love MJF, but good Lord, sometimes some fun in the middle of the show when you do it, a show's a little heavy. You just need something to break it up. And I think this is perfect. You know, so I'm going to bring up a name. I'm going to bring up a name people don't like you to bring up. But when Danhausen was around, he seemed to serve that purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, just pop up and just give you some silly fun. We now have Harley. We have that, you know, this OC, Timeless Tony, when she needs to be.
Yep.
That's the great thing about Timeless Tony. She's probably the most versatile wrestler in AEW right now, as in she could be in a completely comedic segment, and then she could do a super serious segment, and they both have the levity. They both meet the moment, and I don't feel like there's any other wrestler in AEW that can pull it off like she does.
I'm right there with you with all that. I'm right there with you. We go in now to the Women's World Championship match between Chris Statlander and Jamie Hayter. This was good. I think there wasn't really a big drawing factor for a lot of people with this match, unfortunately. And I worry that it's just because of Chris's title reign not really having that much juice to it at this moment. Like, can you point to exactly, Floyd, like, why did it feel like this match didn't really have a lot going for it?
In a vacuum, this was excellently performed.
Yes. You know,
don't get me wrong. But this is how I see it. And negative, you can call me wrong. Chris Statlander is a great in-ring performer. She has no charisma. Like, zero. The times that I thought Chris Statlander was really charismatic is when she was doing the real, when she was full in on the alien gimmick, and when she had Stoke in her corner and she was a heel.
Right.
As a face, she doesn't really cut powerful promos. She doesn't do, like, fire-up spots in the middle. You don't really feel the need to get behind her. And Jamie Hayter, excellent performer. Very physical, all that stuff. I could kind of say the same thing about her. I think she has a little bit more, but what I have learned, my opinion, this is just an opinion. If you love Jamie Hayter, she's your favorite wrestler, completely ignore what I say. The only time I really felt like Jamie was a star is when Britt Baker was next to her. I know in this fan base, that's not a name you want to bring up or whatever. I want her back, and that is considered, you know, a very low opinion. But I will tell you, the only time Jamie Hayter is the world champion felt like the woman, felt like the star, is when Britt Baker was next to her. Because Britt Baker actually has charisma. Britt Baker can actually talk. Britt Baker has this aura about her. And I just don't think these women have it. Now, again, and, you know, like me, I'm just trying to be fair. If you don't agree with me, I'm fine with that. Reasonable minds can disagree. It's just, but right now, they gave her the title. Chris Statlander, in a lot of ways, reminds me of when I was younger, Lex Luger, who was like, you kind of look like that person. You know, with her, she works like that person. But it's just something missing where you don't feel like she is the person. She ain't her. You know what I mean? So maybe I'm wrong. I thought she was better as a heel. You know me. I did that with FTR. I was like, certain people just work better when they're an asshole, because generally you can be more overt and whatever with your feelings and stuff like that. That might be what Chris Statlander did. Her promo with Jamie Hayter before the Dynamite did nothing to get me excited. They cut that up in the video package, and I'm watching the video package, and I'm like, when did all this happen? Because the video package had more energy than the actual promo.
Yes.
It's like, I'm going to defeat you.
And again, too, we mentioned, too, in a vacuum, the performance from the two was unbelievable. The top buckle package, I guess Michinoku driver or something, whatever the fuck, whatever it was off the top rope that Chris did to Jamie was an unbelievable spot, like such an unbelievable spot. And you just wish that there was some more juice to the match. And I do think that both of these women, character-wise, not being able to connect nearly as much may have been a reason as to why, you know, people weren't really feeling it. Again, they wrestled their ass off, and you will never take that away from either performer, but it's just we're not clicking right now, unfortunately. And Chris has moments, and Jamie has moments as well, but overall, I don't know what it is. It just feels, the storytelling just feels kind of empty is all. So, but either way, they still did wrestle a really, really good match. But we'll move over now to the finals of the Continental Classic. Jon Moxley versus Kazuchika Okada. Again, you tie in everything with the fans kind of having Moxley turned babyface this night and really focusing in on that fucked up leg from the previous match. So Okada was really trying to take advantage of it and everything like that. And it was very physical. I loved Okada's just full-on focus of the leg and really beating up on Moxley in this match too. The moment where Moxley grabs his middle finger after he does the Okada spot and just starts dragging it is such a good moment too. There was a moment where Okada, it looks like the referee is trying to avoid getting hit by Jon Moxley and then gets hit with a low blow. Okada's smile after the fact is so good. However, ref gets distracted on the outside with the title belt, and Jon Moxley goes turnabout is fair play and then throws a low blow of his own. But Moxley, though, able to go and hit the Death Rider late in the match and kicked out of the Rainmaker. And then he goes out and he wins the Continental Classic and cuts a babyface promo at the end of the match after winning the Continental Championship. And yeah, again, like you said, it's probably, there is no more subtle babyface turn than this, I feel like. So, huge moment for Moxley. It's another huge accomplishment from the guy in his tenure in AEW.
So, yeah, the dude.
I still feel like you can make somebody more out of this as opposed to Moxley, who is like one of the biggest stars in the company. But you know what? Fair enough.
It wasn't the Okada Mox match I wanted. I thought the match was good. I didn't think it was great. When I'm putting our together our matches of the year nominations, it's probably not going to be on there unless it goes crazy on a cage match or something like that. Because that's how I'm really going to do my match of the year matches, is just the highest rated cage matches for the year. That being said, this was the most kind of subtle babyface turn until the promo.
The promo immediately was like, yes, babyface. Okay. Now.
The promo was like, in case you didn't get what was going on.
Yeah.
I'm a babyface now.
Yeah. I just looked at the cage match rankings, by the way. This was one of the lower rated matches. The lowest matches on the main show were the two tag team matches, Y'all Hate Fun, and then this was the lowest on cage matches. It has a 6.95.
Yeah, he went from putting the belt in the bag and saying y'all don't deserve it to having a belt.
Everyone in the back worked so hard for something like this.
Yes. So basically what John Moxley was saying is everything I did over the last year worked. I made y'all better because I was an asshole. Yes, I won. Like, I might not be the champion, but ultimately I fixed AEW. You're welcome.
Yes.
And that would have been the heel way of saying it, but the face way of saying it is how he did it. And I have been big on charismatic leader of the company. You need a charismatic leader of the company, right? Okay, now you got John Moxley on the fake side. Very charismatic person. When he wants, he could cut with this promo every week if he wants to. He shouldn't, of course. But it was a promo that was needed to read, just like really give some of my AEW fans to get some behind. Like I said, it's just sometimes it feels like that's what's missing is this guy that everybody wants to get behind. And I felt like in that moment in the pop in the thing, John Moxley was the face of AEW. That's what it felt like in that moment. So that's good. Again, you got Okada. You got him losing after 2 years, finally losing the Continental title. And it's a scalp. It's something for someone to hang on their mantle. And I just don't think Mox needed it on his mantle. But again, I am very much a wait and see. I'm a very much patient person. So I'm going to wait and see what they do with this Mox thing. And I might be like, okay, that was the right decision. Just like when he went heel and it was like first few months were rough. And then I really started enjoying it. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, I get what they were trying to do here. That's all I'm trying to say is I didn't like it in this moment to a point, but I am willing to give it time. John Moxley winning. Okada, unannounced John Moxley versus Okada match. Crazy.
Yeah,
I love to see him run it back. Again, don't know how much politics had to do with it. Okada, you know, is going to be in the main event of the Tokyo Dome. But he's still a champion. He's still the international champion. And now we got 700 belts. Almost, if I'm in AEW and I'm not a champion, I'm looking in the mirror and crying at night. I don't know why, because there's so many fucking belts between AEW and ROH. There's like 8 titles between the two companies. So man, 8 men singles titles between the two companies. So that is fucking nuts. So, shout out to John Moxley. Like I said, the promo kind of turned me on everything. It got me fired up. I'm standing up in the suite like, yeah, let's go. Let's go fight the world. And that's what it made me feel like. But and everybody's like, oh, it looks like. I was like, it did not look like to me the Death Riders were going to turn. And again.
No, I didn't think so either, yeah.
Yeah, when you look at AEW, when the Death Riders turned, it's going to be the most violent turn ever.
Exactly.
Moxley's going to get stretchered out. And then they're going to be like, after 6 months, they're going to be like, my bad. And then they're going to be faces again. I don't know how Marina Shafir works as a face.
I don't either.
She has the most heel badass aura of anyone in the company, male or female. Correct. I don't see me getting behind Marina as a sympathetic person. So I think the tweener role for the Death Riders is the best way to go.
I think that's fair. Finally, main event time. The four-way match for the AEW World Championship. Samoa Joe versus Hangman Adam Page versus Swerve Strickland versus MJF. Swerve with the Green Lantern gear. Getting that DC crossover going. Getting that shit going. That's what I'm talking about. And then MJF doing the worst gritty I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a gritty that bad. I didn't even realize he was trying to do the gritty when making fun of Swerve until he did it. And then I was like, what the fuck is he? Oh, my God, it's the gritty. It's like he was trying to gritty.
I will tell you this. It's MJF. He is a performer. He is a performer. He is a bad guy. I truly think it was intentionally bad.
I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I was like what the fuck?
And then he did the jerk-off motion.
And then did the dick attack.
My favorite.
Swerve proceeded to pay him back for.
My favorite part of this was the entrances because.
Oh yeah.
If you're me, and not the biggest fan of one person in this match, Swerve over the top entrance. Everybody was into it. MJF over the top entrance. Everybody was into. Samoa Joe. There was one person, I wouldn't say crickets. It wasn't crickets. but the crowd was not overtly loud for her. I mean, there's only four people in it. You get who I'm talking about. It kind of made me laugh.
Yeah.
Because in that vacuum, you'd be like, okay, there's four guys. And let's just say you're a person that doesn't watch, and you just had like, hey, come look at this. And be like, oh, so the guy doesn't like, they don't like the horse guy or the cowboy guy.
They don't like the southern boy.
But I found out later, yeah. People love that guy.
His merch is selling the most.
Yeah, so, no, I thought this match was about as standard of a Fatal 4-Way or 4-Way match that you
could get. Fine enough. Yeah. It was fine enough. Dude. I thought the moment where the Swerve came in to stop the chokeout finish from Samoa Joe on MJF was a great false finish, because if there was a way MJF was going to lose it, it would be like that. Then they had the ops get involved, do a whole bunch of shit. But then I thought secure on Samoa Joe.
Yeah, go ahead. I thought it was going to be more.
The ops got involved. All of a sudden, here comes the heat seeker on Samoa Joe, and match is done. MJF is world champion again.
I'm an MJF fan. Everyone knows that. I call him the main character, and I don't do that facetiously. Again, there's no more person that had more growth in his time in AEW than MJF, from literally being on the pre-show of Double or Nothing. The first match ever, the pre-show of Double or Nothing, to main eventing multiple matches. There is no person that has growth. If you look at Hangman, he came in. Won the Battle Royal, right? And was literally the main event of the next show. He was a guy from the beginning. MJF literally went from opening the card to main eventing and being the world champion twice in his 30. There has been no person with the growth in AEW, MJF. I'm talking like MJF Orange Cassidy is what we're talking about as far as growth from the beginning, from not knowing who the people are to them being, you know, what they are in the company now. So I do think he's the main character. I've been very clear about that. But yeah, I thought there was going to, he said he was going to come back and he was going to be the worst version of himself. And I don't feel like it's been any more evil than he's been. I mean, like even I know there was a lot of shit about the Diddy line, which didn't even register. Again, I will say this. I will say this. Age does mean something. I grew up in a certain time, you know, where like women were being bet. Like other matches, you get a night with my woman in the 80s. I went from that, you know, to the Attitude Era. The Attitude Era where, like all sorts of names being called. You know what I mean? Just bad, terrible shit, right? So I am desensitized to a lot of this stuff. It's just wrestling to me. So when he said that, and someone's like, it's racist, I'm like, hi, whatever. I'm not going to ever invalidate your feelings. So I'm just going to say okay and move on. So, and then in this match, I was like, I don't feel like MJF is any more overtly evil than he was. So maybe we get it tonight on Dynamite or going forward.
I think the promo tonight might be the thing right there, but you know, a big moment. It's a big moment, man. I mean, he came back and then all of a sudden he got the Triple B back so fast.
I will tell you this. I've heard it might not have came off on TV correct, but when he won that title, that place shook.
Yeah.
It was loud. Everybody loved it. So in this world, when you get in your world, you're like, everyone's sick of MJF. You're sick of MJF. Your friends, you and your friends might be sick of MJF. But that night in Chicago, entrance to title win, nobody in that building was sick of MJF. And I say nobody, but, you know, it felt like the majority of the people in that building were not sick of MJF. And the main character is the main champion. Oh, my God, MJF. And MJF is the world champion. The FTR are the world champions. Can we say the Wardlow's and the American Gladiators? Can we say the
Sure.
Can we say the Pinnacle's on top? Can we say that?
I mean, kind of.
Can we say that? Can we say that? Is there a
Just
faction?
A little bit, yeah.
Is there a faction in AEW history where, I mean, I know they're not a faction anymore, but where it seems like all the people are in a better position than they were in the faction? Even Sean Spears is on TV every week. I don't really watch that TV a lot, but he's on there.
He's there.
So, yeah. I heard this rumor that everybody's worse after dealing with MJF.
I guess not.
I feel like everybody's better without him dealing with MJF, you know? So, no. But who's I thought excellent finish. I'm looking forward to MJF on top. I've always been clear about MJF. In the entertainment world, wrestling, to me, is not just easier to book, but more fun to book with the over-the-top bad guy world champion.
I agree.
Now we have it. We'll see where it comes from. It might not work, and I might be like, dude, yeah, this was a bad idea. We'll see. I believe in MJF. I believe in TK. I believe in the rest of the roster, and I think they're going to have a good time.
For sure. And that was World's End. Solid show. I would say it was a solid, really good show to close out 2025. Might not be one I go back to a ton, but I will say it definitely closed things out on a good note.
I will go back to Moxley versus Fletcher, which I truly think is on my match of the year contender list, and Takeshita and Okada for the vibes for me. But
there you
other
go.
Than that, I probably won't watch any other match on the show ever again.
There you go. That's everything we got for World's End. New Year's Smash, which will be starting up in just under a half hour by the time we're finishing this. We're going to have the TBS Championship match between Mercedes Moné and Willow Nightingale. We're going to hear from the new world champion, MJF. The national championship is being defended as Ricochet will face off against Jungle Jack Perry. Why he gets a title match, I don't fucking know, but sure. Why the fuck not?
He pinned Ricochet.
I don't give a fuck.
I mean, that's just standard.
I don't know.
Hey, are you also asking why Willow's getting a title shot?
No, that makes sense. It doesn't.
It's literally for the same reason.
Listen, dude, the hater in me is just like, it doesn't listen to logic, so I will continue to not listen to logic. So you can take that and shove it. it's what it is. It's what it is.
Dude, we got some bald on bald violence, right?
Yeah. And then Bandito will face off against the Beast Mortos. And we're also getting Death Riders versus Timeless Tony Storm, Orange Cassidy, and Roderick Strong in a Tornado Trios match. So another mixed tag match we're going to get as well. Oh, and John Moxley is also going to face Josh Alexander Championship Eliminator match.
That's the bald on bald violence. Yes.
I was like, where is he mentioned? Oh, yeah, that's right. Moxley and Alexander.
So, yeah, it's a very solid show. I need a big angle. I need to end the year on a big angle. I think having a show on New Year's Eve and you don't end New Year's Eve with a big angle is just a big mistake. I don't know what it is. I'm not even guessing. You have a New Year's Eve show. You got to end the year on a big angle.
I would agree with that. Yeah, just give us something to look forward to in 2026. So I don't know what they do, but I'm excited to see it at least.
Yes, I am excited for it. Shout out Omaha, Nebraska. AEW fans, girl Lauren May, Liz Lohman is going to be in the building. They're both Nebraskans. And so shout out to them. Hope they have a great time. I hope everybody enjoys the show. And I hope everybody just has a great and safe-ish New Year's Eve. Having a completely safe New Year's Eve is boring. I'm going to have a completely safe New Year's Eve. I'm going to start when Harry Met Sally to where it ends at midnight. Where it ends at midnight. So I know what a safe New Year's Eve is like, and I'm going to tell you it's boring as fuck. So have a safe-ish New Year's Eve. Just be on the borderline of trouble. Borderline.
Boom.
Like, if you usually do four drinks, how about doing a fifth one this one time? Because it's New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
But stay home. Absolutely stay home.
Bro, I can't go anywhere. The snow here sucks. So, like,
No. Being a safe.
Mine will be genuinely boring.
Yes. Yeah, if you have two glasses, go on a third. But do it at home. Do it, like I said, safe-ish. But have a great time. Watch whatever your usual tradition is. Do it. Hug your families. Tell everybody you love them. If you're going to reflect, you're going to tell a girl. If you got a crush on a girl or a guy or a them, whatever your crush is on a person, drop it tonight. Tell them. don't leave this year with that shit. Shit, like, throw it out there. See what they got to say. It's semi-romantic because it's the day. I can't go into next year without you knowing I love you. They might say no, but shit, that's life. That's lessons. Have fun with that.
Man, you really do like When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, it's my favorite movie ever. Yes. This 6 foot, 300-pound, very black man. Yeah, I told everyone. I watched that movie when I was young. It ruined my life because I had an unrealistic expectation of what love is. So, no, I love that movie every year. All right. I mean, this is going to be one where I probably very much cry at the end of it because we said RIP this year in a very terrible way to Rob Reiner, who was the director of the movie and one of the people that helped with the story of the movie. So that part is going to be a little sad watching it because, again, I am 44, and probably the last 24 years, that's how I brought in my new year, watching When Harry Met Sally.
Boom. Well, guys, I think that's going to close things out on our final All Things Elite of 2025. Once again, Happy New Year to everybody, and we appreciate all the support you've given us in 2025. Hope to continue to have you guys joining us for everything related to AEW going forward in 2026. If you enjoy the show, be sure to share us around with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish, whether you listen to us on Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe, turn automatic downloads on, and follow us on Twitter. We are at AT Elite Pod on Twitter. You can also follow at Social Suplex. They're the reason this show exists, and they have a whole bunch of great other podcasts that you can give a listen to. So support the guys at Social Suplex. I'm at Austin Sumowitz, SCUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. Happy New Year. Happy 2026. Best of luck to everybody in the new year. And I will pass it off to my buddy Floyd, who I hope has a lovely new year. And he will take us home on this episode of All Things Elite.
Same to you, buddy. You, Sydney, and the family have an amazing new year. I have one suggestion. Another suggestion other than one I had. At about 11:45 tonight, go to the bathroom and take the biggest shit that you can, because there's no reason to take shit in the 2026. With that, I will leave you how I always leave you, whether it is home, work, or school. Always do your best to be elite.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.